Okay. My name is Philip Kemp. I'm the nephew of Jackie Presser. I'm with the Teamsters for 15 years. And my intention is to get this place unionized. No, I'm kidding. There have been some fears that that's what this forum was to be about, something like that, but not really. When I suggested having a forum on Holden, originally I said Holden labor practices, but we changed it to working at Holden. I thought of the idea because over the months I've heard a lot of people say good things and bad things about how they felt about working here at Holden, being a volunteer employee. And I've also investigated a lot of other volunteer organizations and compared a little bit and stuff. So my idea was to just provide a space for people to discuss stuff about primarily what kind of working conditions they think they have or would like to see at Holden. And just so that they can tell each other, you know, what they like and dislike. For example, specific ideas I was thinking about was like one of the real good benefits of being a volunteer here is that you get an out every so often, a 5-day out, which is kind of like vacation kind of thing. And that's designed for your mental health or to do your other duties or things you need to do for your life. Some people during the summer have told me a drawback they see is having to work 6 days a week instead of five, or feeling that's expected, even though they haven't always had a contract that said you will work, you know, that kind of thing. A lot of people really enjoy the idea that they're volunteer and not paid, makes them work for special reasons. They understand that their work is for whatever reasons they're here for. So I primarily wanted to focus on what we consider as good and bad labor and working conditions here. And I didn't really want to make a presentation or anything. I can do some moderating in case things get boring or we need new topics or something. But primarily I just wanted people to talk and see what they thought. Andrew and I can start some conversation or something. One thing I brought up earlier was that 6-day work week. Personally, I would really like to have a 5-day work week here. Andrew really likes being a worker here at Holden. Did you have something to say?
That pretty much sums it up.
Okay, now be quiet. Okay, no, I can't.
What I had in mind to talk about was just to point out for me how I see some of the aspects of volunteer work as having real personal value, providing certain potential for personal gratification that isn't really a realistic opportunity out in the real world. And more specifically, as a student, or when I've worked full-time out in the real world, it seems to me that there's a lot of really worthy organizations that need volunteer workers, but that there are a lot of deterrents to doing volunteer work. The time that you spend working for nothing, so to speak, can take away from the competitive edge that you have over the people that you go to school with or you work with. So it's kind of neat to be able to come to an economic setting where it's sort of a steady state. You don't need to worry about the fact that doing volunteer work is going to have an effect on, a negative effect on your life, maybe your social life or your income or your grades. And there's also the question of the nature of volunteer work as it stands in relation to wages. I've done the same sort of work in Victoria that I'm doing in the kitchen here for the last couple of years that I've been in college, and it seems to me that the attitude towards working is, to a large extent, well, it really sucks. The shifts are bad. It's really hard work, but it's worthwhile because you get a paycheck every 2 weeks and you can go out and spend a certain percentage of that trying to alleviate the nastiness of going to work in the morning. Which really, in a sort of Marxist term, alienates you from your labor. In other words, your main objective or your main focus while you're at work is the money that you're making, not the work that you're doing. It all sort of fits in with the attitude that a lot of North Americans have towards work, that it's sort of a necessary evil. Whereas up here, it seems to me that the work that needs to be done isn't profit motivated. You see the results of your work, you get an opportunity to have a real connection with your work.
Yeah, and that leads into one thing I've heard discussed quite a bit, is that a lot of us at Holden aren't paid at all, no stipend or anything. A lot of volunteer organizations will pay volunteers travel to and from the job and give them all a stipend and usually health insurance too. For example, the Mennonite Central Committee, the Jesuit Volunteer Corps, something like that. So one thing I've heard discussed over the months is that Holden doesn't allow any low income or poor people to come, even for a short length of time, to Holden, because they don't receive any monetary gain at all. So there's also a downside to not having any money at all. I mean, there's a good side, but the flip side of that is that we kind of limit who can come here as workers. So that's a question of labor conditions here, is how do people feel about getting no money or getting a stipend or things like that, health insurance.
They do offer scholarships, don't they, for some low-income people to come? At least that's what we were told at the last LSM National Retreat.
Oh,
in Atlanta? That's what they said.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
What's somebody said?
One of my particular frustrations at Holden is that a lot of the working conditions and stuff haven't been communicated to me clearly. I've been here a lot of months and I'm never real sure about a lot of things like that. So I don't know. That might be right.
Situation on that, Ken?
On Phil's working conditions or scholarships?
Scholarships.
Oh.
I know you don't know about Phil.
Holden has attempted to attract not so much poor people, but people of diverse cultures and people of different races. And I think what was talked about at the conference in Atlanta was the scholarship program to bring people of color to Holden Village. So scholarships are available for Native Americans, Afro-Americans, and Asian people at the present time. Some of that's tied into the Rainbow Celebration that's for 2 weeks, and some of it isn't. There's a scholarship fund that was established by Leo Bustad when his daughter died to, in memory of Karen, to bring, Africans to Holden. But Leo recently has expanded that to want to include all third world people. So Casal, now all of his expenses were paid to be here. Those efforts and programs have not been directed, though, at poor people across the board. It's been more of a cultural and race issue.
Well, one question we can start talking about maybe, do we work too much or too little at Holden? I've heard both short and long-termers talk about that last summer. Some people call it Holden labor camp. And other people said they didn't have enough to do. So, how do you guys feel? How do you feel about, are you expected to work too much or not? Or is it an unstated expectation? Do you feel guilty about how much work you do or not do? Do you feel great about it? You feel silenced?
One of the things that I'm struck by often is the real diversity of task, the diversity of hours, and to a certain extent, the diversity of expectations of those of us on staff here at Holden. I think ranging from things that seem to me quite well defined, like working in the kitchen, to things that might be really broadly defined, like what Kirk does, for example.
What does Kirk
do? That's just it, real broadly. You know, pick a task, any task.
Why does he do it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's part of the question, I think, is that I'm really struck by the diversity, and something that occurs to me is part of it has to do with the tasks that are set in front of people. I mean, the little title that we have after our name, the first three questions that get asked when you come to Holden: who are you, what you're going to be doing, how long are you going to be here? Is that what you're going to be doing, that task title? I think that's the one to start of it. That's sort of like one little part of a description of how we do work. But I think another wild card that gets thrown into it is the individual themselves. And what of themselves do they bring to that task to help in its definition? I think in some of the tasks that are more strictly defined, for example, in the kitchen, again, this is my perspective, there I think there is less that the individual can bring to really modify that task as they themselves as an individual. But for other tasks, for example, my own perspective, and I don't mean to pick on Kirk, but a lot of what he does, I think, is intrinsically Kirk. I think that's just him by nature. I know a lot of the things that I do in my work are just me by my nature and have a lot to do with who I am and how I work rather than specifically what I'm told to do. So I guess for me, one of the beauties, and I think one of the difficulties in getting a finger on what is work at Holding, is this wide diversity, not only of specific defined tasks, but the individuals themselves and what they bring to these tasks.
So you feel free to do that?
I can't say that I always feel free to do that, but I'm not talking about constraints on myself. I'm just talking about what I observe.
I don't think there's anyone really knows exactly what's supposed to be done, but I don't think that probably in the history of Holden there's ever, I got a sense of that when I heard a little bit about people filling out these job descriptions, and if that's done so frequently, then obviously there's no real clue as to, it seems like you could create new jobs or you could make less jobs, or it's something that is like what you're saying, John, that nobody really knows, so it's not a matter of somebody knowing to tell you. It may be people that have been here longer having an idea of the things that do need to be done, but I think that it's not as rigid as any other job that I've ever had. I think it's really up to you in many ways to see what you want to have done, and if it involves you working more than you would want to work, then that's part of the community process.
The thing that always takes me by surprise, even after a couple of years here, is how it doesn't really matter what day it is. There isn't that dreaded Monday and the release of Friday. And in that sense, I like the 6-day work week because it feels real balanced. The classic work, play, worship, eat, it's all kind of in perspective. So it doesn't really matter that it's Friday night because Friday night's not that much different from Monday night here. So I stopped feeling overworked or boxed in when I threw out my list of things I wanted to do, read a book a week, learn to play the guitar, do pottery. I came with all these things I wanted to do and there just wasn't enough time in the day. So now, just letting things happen as they happen, I don't feel so like there's not enough time and too much is expected of me at work like I did at first.
It seems to me that the nature of the work here allows for a certain fuzziness between the boundaries of when your shift at work starts and when your interaction in the village ends. It's really different from other work. You can sort of go into your shift and when it's not like you punch out at a certain time. If there's still some stuff that needs to be done, you can stay around and do it, or if you get off your shift and you feel like doing some other sort of work, there's no deterrence in the way of wandering into another setting and helping those people out.
Does that wear you out? Does dish team feel like work? Does it bother you that, Carrie, that you felt like you had to sacrifice some of your personal agenda?
First I thought this place is nuts. You had to go to dish team, hose house training, rescue team training, it's community meeting. It seemed like meeting after meeting after. But that all kind of settles in after a while and fits. When you think of it, having to do dishes a couple times a week is better than every day at home. So when I looked at it that way, then it didn't bother me so much anymore.
I guess another thing that I've come to find is that I've sort of tossed out a judgment on my own part of work equity. That is the work that I'm doing equitable with respect to, say, the work that Jackie is doing? In other words, are we on par? Are we both equally contributing to the village? And basing what I'm doing and how much I'm performing sort of relative, say, to what Jackie's doing, sort of making sure that Ron and I and everybody else in the village. After a while, and actually this process happened before then, before coming to Holden, but I was glad to see that I could take that same mindset here and just throw it away and say, that doesn't work. For a variety of reasons, trying to achieve equity, and I think of dish teams, for example. I mean, I've had some dish teams that have been absolutely nothing. I've had some dish teams from hell. I'm sure over the long term we can talk about balancing. I wonder for people who are here only for a month and maybe feel like they've gotten the worst dish teams of their lives while they've seen other people here sort of breeze on by with a couple of hunger awareness nights and that's that. And I know that Margaret and Rich really try to balance that as best they can, but I guess I've found that over time that, well, not even over time, but just looking at the matter of balancing, to me, is less of an objective as it is, first of all, being very honest with myself, what I'm capable of contributing, and my own needs, and making sure that I'm not sacrificing myself to hold this work. But at the same time, I don't want to make sure that, I don't want to be looking at what I'm putting in, is it the same as everybody else, or am I living up to a Holden standard? I've tried to diffuse that, and so far it's worked pretty successfully. For one thing, it's made me much more aware of some of my own personal issues that have to do with work and my own personal work ethic. It doesn't have to do with anything else. It has to do with me. And throwing that out, how I relate to other people, and just looking at me and how I do work, has really been valuable.
One question that I've often had posed to me is kind of in response to this elusive 6-hour workday that we're supposed to fulfill, and that is when you live your work and worship and everything else here at Holden, how do you put the boundaries on that work? And is taking time out of your 6-hour workday to prepare for Vespers or to prepare for Matins or to do or to attend a session that you want to attend while you're here, how do you do that? How do you deal with that in this kind of agenda that's given to the labor force? And it's easier, I think, for myself as a long-term person, because I know that, you know, I have put in more than enough hours to fulfill 6 hours a day for a long time. And so I don't have any trouble with that. But then somebody who's only here for 3 weeks and wants to, you know, do a Vespers and do a Matins and do all these other things, which are essential to Holden Village, how do they fit all of those things in with their workday and also work? I mean, what, in that sense, what is work and what isn't work?
Yes, I've become more aware of that lately with the youth weekends and all the sign-ups for snack bar and you know, pool hall and things like that, and being involved in the animals for the youth group, and thinking that that's something that, you know, staff is really encouraged and almost expected to be able to fulfill, to make that go, and sort of almost on top of that 6-hour workday, to, you know, be urged to do that as well, becomes difficult then. And I've found that it's hard to find your own time when it's all those community expectations. I don't know, it gets to be overwhelming sometimes. And I guess I respond to what Carrie said about, you know, she kind of put things on the back burner and think about somebody who's here for 3 weeks and really wants to do a weaving and pottery and things like that, and that becomes difficult to do. I don't know where to join.
It's like if our work is supposed to be play, then shouldn't our play also be our work? And I think that those extra things, people need to have time to do those extra things, as well as do all the performance.
What I'm hearing, and this is something that I've wrestled with too, is that how am I able to weigh those priorities, as it were? The priorities of the things that the community feels needs to be done, like the extra, and it's obvious there's an extra workload associated with the youth weekends with approximately the same amount of staff that we've carried through the winter. And certainly, if those tasks are going to get done, that's going to require more hours or more resources by the community as a whole. How do we weigh that in priority with the things that we personally feel we need to get done, with things like Laura mentioned, like Vespers and Matins? I know personally myself, I have a real tough time saying, is it more important for me to be Kermit the Frog or make sure that I'm putting the time in so that Narnia gets opened on time? It's like apples and oranges. And I guess that's one of the personal things that I would like more help with, I guess, is learning to help define some of those priorities. And maybe the wrong question to ask, I don't discount that. But when there are these different opportunities that, as you say, Amy, it can become almost expectations, how do we balance that out with other expectations that are also presented to us?
I think that's a challenge, John.
Yeah, it is a challenge.
You have to wrestle with that and work it out for you. That unlike another job where your boss says, be here at this time and take off at that time, leave at that time, da da da, all of us really dictate that.
But I guess the problem that I have with that, Rich, is that I may make one decision based on that. But nonetheless, the things that I am doing supposedly contribute to the community as a whole. And if I make my own personal priority judgment, that may not be in agreement with the needs of the community. And I want to be sensitive to that, I guess. And so what I'm asking for is the community to help me make that judgment. Ultimately, it's true. I'm going to make the decision about what I work or what I play. But one of the things that I find helpful is help from the community in some way to help balance those priorities. What is more important, being Kermit the Frog or building cabinetry for Narnia? It's kind of apples and oranges, and I need a little more input, I guess. But you're right, ultimately, I need to make that decision.
Well, then that seems to me the other question is that your decision to make, or is that the community's decision to make? I mean, is community just a bunch of people making independent decisions, or is community a bunch of people making decisions together about how we work and how we work?
Well, I guess my response to that is I still believe ultimately the decision is made, because I'm the one that's wielding the hammer or putting the mask on. That's my choice. But I think what you're saying that I agree with is that as a community, we need to have a lot of maybe some more understanding, so that when we make those decisions, we're operating knowing the importance of how things come out here.
Isn't that kind of why we do things like the whiteboard? Matt put up the whole schedule for May, things that need to be done. And then, you know, I, as someone who may not have a heavy workload that month, can see that carpenters, electricians are going to have a hard time getting their stuff done, so then maybe I should volunteer to be Kermit the Frog. Or that kind of thing, watching out for each other's.
Yeah, it's not so much a question of my wanting Holden to help me make some decision about what my work ethic is, but rather getting support from the community so that I can make that decision and live with the consequences in a supportive atmosphere. If I take some time off, let me rephrase that, if I don't put in 8 or 9 hour days now, and Narnia doesn't get finished on time, you know, are my fellow people here at Holden going to say, gee, it's too bad Matt didn't, you know, really work harder and bust his ass to do it, get it done on time? Because I think we still reward that kind of work ethic here without really examining it, whether it's a healthy work ethic or not. And one of the things I have been wrestling with this past 9 months is, what is a Christian work ethic? What is work in a work atmosphere that supports the human being and allows the work to be not more important than person?
Yeah, and from my perspective, it makes me really mad when we're not clear on what exactly. See, like, the idea, at Holland, I've heard it said a lot, our work and our play is our life, you know. But I've heard that same kind of type of rhetoric, I think, from companies I've worked at, that were really militant, you know, and they tried to get as much work out of you as possible. During the Industrial Revolution in the 1880s, it got so bad they wouldn't let kids go home at night. They were keeping them at the factories. Okay, and I'm not comparing Poland to the Industrial Revolution, but the offshoot out of that for the labor movement was that you become very clear on what is work and what isn't. And that was to protect your, to be just. In other words, like when I worked for United Parcel Service, I didn't do anything except that I punched in and punched out. And that, you know, and they paid me. I didn't go to staff meetings, for example, unless you're paid. And that was, in the long run, to protect the workers from being overworked and expecting to do stuff without being paid. The feeling I get at Holden, personally, is that it's far more subtle than that. Okay, since we are so unclear on, in my perspective, on exactly what is work and what isn't, like is this teamwork or is it a commitment to the community, that some of us decide that I don't work enough, so I gotta do a lot of work. And other people decide, well, they're not sure what to count as work and what not to. And so maybe some people overwork because they feel guilty. Maybe we all feel guilty, you know. As Lutherans, we're pretty good at that. Anyway, what I would like to see is not for a place to say, well, you decide for yourself what should be work and what shouldn't, but that we decide as a group and then communicate that very clearly to everybody so none of them get caught in the trap of either overworking or feeling guilty because they're not.
I heard that back years ago at Holden, people only worked half days. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's just one thought that sticks in my head. The other thing is picking, working off of Matt's comment, I'm interested in a work ethic that helps us as a community be what we say we are. And if we say that the gospel is at the heart of what we're about here, it seems odd to me that one of the ways people get the time they need for themselves or whatever is, you know, like, I mean, when I look at the schedule for the week, prime time
for people to kind of steal some time for themselves is tax study. Now, this is rather fresh in my thoughts tonight, but, you know, if that proclamation, that gospel is at the heart of the week, why is it that that's the thing that, you know, we say, oh, you know, well, I just need this hour for myself. I mean, if I went up to each person and asked them, say, you tell me you care about the gospel, you tell me you care about scripture, why weren't you at text study? And they would tell me things about needing time for themselves. What does that say about our lives here, our work here? If that's the way we get that time for ourselves, then something about the way we live our lives here is working against the very thing that we say we are as a community. And I feel that stuff because I have to constantly ask people to give of their supposedly extra time for things. So I feel like I often have a sense for something's rotten in Denmark, as Shakespeare said, or something's not right here. But that's just...
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I just wonder why that... It sounds a little bit to me like the gospel happens on Friday night for an hour, which feels a little bit like church on the outside of here happens on Sunday.
I just want to. Carol wants me. She wants a piece of me.
Yeah. As Carrie said, we're coming in. Yeah, right. We live the gospel here. That's right. You know that. But I also think we say that we are the church in that classic definition where the gospel is proclaimed and the sacraments rightly administered, and that if we say that that service Sunday night is at the heart of our life together, and part of that is because the gospel is proclaimed there. Yes, it's proclaimed in our lives and our deeds, but I think there's something central to that, at least in the Lutheran tradition. And I'm not saying that text study should have a bigger claim on people's lives than community meeting or than advocacy or anything else, but when that is the low point, I think that says something.
I guess I felt that way in relation to taking time out to work on vespers or to work on matins, and it's generally been my choice to spend that time because it's something that interests me, and I generally don't care what anyone else thinks about me spending that time on it, and I have used my work time, if everything is done, to work on that. And I have also often wondered, you know, I mean, I feel like asking everybody, you know, is that okay? Is that acceptable if things have been done for me to take a little, because I think anyone can do matins or vespers and do it right there and open a book and read something. But I guess I feel like the part of the gospel or part of our understanding of what the gospel is supposed to be in our lives, if that's indeed going to somehow affect us a little bit deeper, I think we need to think about it and contemplate it more before we stand up and say whatever. So I have often wondered about that. I guess I've made my own decision about it, but I wonder if anyone else has any opinion.
I'd be kind of interested to know, along the same lines, what anyone's opinion would be if not all the work was done and someone needed to concentrate on something like that too. I mean, I guess I can see that saying, you know, if my work is done, can I do this now? But like John was saying, you know, we've got all of this in Narnia to do, but can I do this? And I wonder if that should be a reason to not be able to do it or to do it.
Because I feel like that's the point where the time I need for myself and the time that I think the community needs for itself, that's where it meets, I think, is kind of in our thinking about
gospel and our spirituality, and I think that comes out most predominantly in Vespers and Matins and Eucharist. But I think that it's restricted to those situations, but I do it a lot more here than I ever have in my entire life, so I connect it somehow to that Matins and Vespers process.
One thing I keep hearing is that people feel guilty for taking time to do this or that. And I haven't heard anybody say, somebody said I made the wrong decision, or somebody said, why aren't you working? And I don't think anybody probably has an example where they can honestly say that somebody said, why aren't you at work, and not, why are you preparing for Vespers instead of working? Sense of being at your job. And so I guess I wonder where all this guilt is coming from.
I don't think it's guilt at all. I personally...
Well, I don't... Whatever it is.
Okay, I think...
I just wonder where it's coming from. And,
well, I have
and
an example. Of
well, and I guess I think we tend to blame the village for it. And yet, for example... earlier when John was talking, and I think he's right that, you know, part of everyone's work style is a reflection of themselves. And I think that's true to a degree. I mean, some of how I work is a reflection of me, and some of it is also a reflection of how much needs to be done. And I can accept that as being a part of me, and so some of it's my fault. But then when we talk about the other side of it, it seems to be the village's fault. I guess I see a little... I don't think we're being honest, maybe.
My way of testing what I should do comes from the people that have been here longer. And when I see those people working all the time and never doing Matins or Vespers, I guess that I feel like they've made, I guess I feel like there's something really wrong with that. And I feel like why should I be the one? I mean, I guess it's more out of curiosity. I want to know what people would do if everyone was required to do a Vespers or a Matins as a means of exploring their understanding of their relationship with God and their understanding of their relationship with each other. Well, I mean, I just think it would be amazing, but it doesn't, I mean, I have yet to know a lot of people here because I don't live with them and I don't hear any of what they believe, really.
One of the questions that I get asked frequently as a work area head is it okay if I take some time off to do this or do that or do something like this? And I think that to merely say that Holden is a place where we can do it is not enough. And this is getting back to what I was saying about support earlier. We're all here for, I think, something different than we get on the outside world. And I think that the problem isn't guilt or that Holden Village puts a guilt trip on us. I think it's Holden's classic biggest issue. Any problem that I've ever seen in the last 9 months comes under this heading, and it's called lack of communication. Holden Village does not, and I use this, the term Holden Village, both as a corporate apparatus with an administrator, a business manager, an operations manager, a pastor, a board of directors, does not clearly articulate its support of people living a different way, saying it's okay to say that working for Vespers or going for a walk with your friend is just as important as working at Narnia. There is a decision and an articulation of support. Holden Village, I don't think, puts a guilt trip on people. I think that it merely doesn't support a better way of behaving.
Yeah, see, I feel pretty much the same. I've never had anybody tell me I should get to work, but I feel the sense of being squashed by not ever hearing anybody say, this is when you should be working, this is when you shouldn't. I mean, we're not clear. I don't know when or what. I feel unclear. But then I do learn over the time that there are, I don't know if it's the village or the company, you know, and I call it a company because it's incorporated and it has a board of directors and it has a management, okay. I don't know if the community of the village, the company, my work area heads, what they expect, because a lot of this isn't communicated. But then you hear comments like a big discussion of when should we get mail, because people are sitting on the dock not working, they're reading mail during work time. Well, how come nobody has ever told me when work time is? And when I ask, everybody says, well, that's up to you to decide. You know, so I feel real strongly with you, Matt, is that I would be glad to punch a clock here. You know, I would love that. And I would say preparing for Vespers would be work time. And that you would, you know, you punch that clock so that people know they're clear. And I've heard people talk about, well, your whole life is your work, but I find it hard to believe that we don't all have a clear distinction in our head of what, when we're working and when we're not. I mean, we have, I think, at least I have this idea of when I give my time to some other thing, which is valuable and worthy. You know, I'm not saying it's not worthy. I work for as a volunteer, and that's a worthy situation. But I have a clear thing of when this is my time and when this is work time, you know. And I feel squashed when I don't know the distinction. I'm not clear. That's what bothers me.
I really feel like Jennifer hit it on the head when she said the people who have been here longer really create the attitudes of what work is. I think it's almost power of example for that. I mean, my work habits are going to impact somebody who's here for 3 weeks who has just gotten here. You know, they see me working really hard and they're like, oh, okay, because I have to work this way. Or they see me sitting on the dock all day and they say, oh, okay. And I've always felt that, you know, I don't know, a lot of long-termers, I see them working really hard and not doing the Vespers or Matins or whatever, and I feel like maybe that's a way of dealing with not having enough time for oneself, is to not be involved in those things. Yet, I know for me it's important that I be involved in those things, and then finding that I don't have enough time for myself, and then it comes back to the work issue again, and that's how I can't say to myself that I can cut myself off from doing a Vespers. I don't feel that that's healthy for the community. But then where does it give? Does it give in work? I don't know.
I think you're right, Amy, but I think it goes for almost every person here in this room, because most of us here have been here through the winter. Yeah. And if Holden isn't what you want it to be, I don't think it's an administrator's fault. I don't think it's the director's fault. If it is their fault, it's as much their fault as it is our own, all of us.
True.
And I think it's to push it off as somebody else's responsibility, I guess, I don't think is.
Yeah. I filter
through my own filter some of the things I'm hearing. And what I'm hearing is a struggle with what we call the difference between an internal or an external locus of control. It's an issue of where are decisions and the control about your life made, outside of you or within you. And I hear some people saying, I want the outside world to tell me how to do it, and to tell me where my boundaries are, and to tell me whether I'm meeting expectations or not. And I hear other people complaining that Holden isn't doing that for me. And I guess I think one of the biggest blessings of Holden is that it doesn't do that for me. It forces me to do it for myself. It forces me to wrestle with where that boundary is all the time. It forces me to wrestle with checking it out at times when I'm not sure. It forces me to be responsible for myself and to work up to what I think is responsible stewardship of the village. I wouldn't want to be here if there was a time clock. I'd be one of the first ones on the bus out of here. I wouldn't want to be here if the administration dictated things that tight.
Well, my personal response to that is that that's not true, though. Because I would agree with that, except that over the course of the months, I felt that there is somebody dictating, not somebody, but something dictating.
What is that?
Well, for example, last summer, the Mavericks started working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And I don't know what happened, but one day our work area head came and said very specifically, okay, we're going to have to go to working 6 days a week. So as a subgroup, I don't know what happened, okay, because I wasn't involved. But out of somewhere, out of nowhere, I don't know because I was never told. Our decision of how to work was decided to be wrong, and we had to change it. I hear people say, well, you can do your work however you want, but then as time goes by, you hear things like 36 hours, 6 days a week, things that just kind of flowed in that it wasn't ever said clearly or stated or written down, so you can't go to the source. So my feeling is that that would be great, except I sense that there's something underlying that is telling me how to work, only it's not being clear about it. I mean, so I even feel more frustrated because I can't argue against it. Because if they were clear about it, or not they, but if the source was clear, I could unionize, you know? I could, right? I mean, I could decide what was, you know, I mean.
I will go even further and lay this at the on the desk of the administrators here at Holden Village, and I will speak directly to the personnel committee and to the personnel directors and the director and the operations manager. I think that all this ideal that we have about Holden Village being a place where we can decide what our work is and what it means to us can be used as a cop-out and has been used as a cop-out to abdicate one's personal responsibility to one's work.
Well, am I glad you left me out of that list of people.
Could you just expound on that a little
bit? Yeah, be specific. I think Phil brought up a really good example that there was a group of Mavericks that happened before I got here, so I only know about it by hearsay. And they were told that they had to work a 6 day week, or at least a 5.5 day week, which is 6 days. I mean, that means they're actively doing some kind of work. That is in absolute opposition to the ideals that we're talking about, that we can decide what our work means to us and how we want to do it. Now, I realize that some work areas don't have that option. Housekeeping, kitchen, work has to be done Sundays, Saturdays, afternoons.
Mavericks would be included in that, wouldn't they?
Why? Sure, they help with dish team.
Well, there's definitely matter of work to be done on Saturdays and Sundays in the summer.
Right.
That was part of the decision, wasn't it? Not to...
I don't know anything about the decision except that the Mavericks had to go to a 6 or a 5.5 day work week. If you know something about the decision, I'd love to hear about it.
Well, I think I really this don't, is one, but I guess I'm just trying to think about it and think that there is work to be done every day of the week for Mavericks.
Yes, but you can schedule it so that you have people working continuously, yet they only work 5 days.
Again, Phil, I really don't know anything about it. And,
no.
I don't know if it was a matter of coverage or if it was just a matter of that 5 days, 8 hours a day wasn't working out. And it quite possibly could have been simply that.
If it wasn't working out, then I think, especially as head Maverick, that should have been communicated to me.
Well, I would agree.
And that means it comes from the administration, those people.
But see, I mean, you weren't the head Maverick at that point, but I would agree that if that was a problem, is that that work schedule wasn't working out, it's obviously much more honest and fair to say that's the problem. And not to say, okay, we're going to change the work schedule.
Then that should be articulated by the management of Holden.
But see, I don't know that that was the problem. And I would say that that's the head Mavericks. I mean, that's a crew decision, right?
No, it's not a crew decision. If the head Maverick is being told by someone that this is not a way to work, then that's obviously not a head Maverick decision.
But I would still say that nothing's been ever cast in stone here. And
except this fireplace.
Well, why don't you finish saying what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm sorry for interrupting.
Thank you, Kirk.
I was involved in that decision, if you'd like to hear about it.
I'd love to hear about it.
I recall sitting in Mike's office with Dan Gentner and Mike, and were you there yet? Yeah. And talking about the new Maverick work schedule that had been in place, I think, for a couple weeks. And Dan talking about having problems kind of supervising that, having difficulty covering the demands that 7 days of needing Mavericks makes, shifting people around, covering shifts, being able to supervise what's happening or give direction or whatever with the crew when he's on his days off. And part of the discussion also involved the decision on the part of the Mavericks to change their work schedule and their whole work pattern without that being really consulted with anybody else. And some of the kind of ramifications that was beginning to have for the rest of the community. Some of the questions about, well, you know, could we work 4 9-hour days? How about if we change our schedule to do this? How about if we change our schedule to do that? And what we were looking at was probably pure chaos as far as everybody wanting to change everything around. And at that point in the summer, the decision was agreed upon. It would be best to go back to what everybody practices and what we've always been doing. It's not working, and it's creating more problems than it's worth.
But Rich, doesn't that go against what you were saying earlier about having the freedom to set our own boundaries and our own work hours?
And that's
part of our individual freedom of being here, and that it's not defined? I think there's a difference between
a whole work area changing a whole pattern and an individual person having some flexibility within the whole pattern.
Ah, there's an articulation. We're getting somewhere. Go ahead, Kim.
Part of the concern that came out of that whole thing was that the whole discussion then started centering on hours counting. And all of a sudden there were other work areas that were looking at the Mavericks saying, 8 hour day, gosh, they played hacky sack for an hour. Was that part of their hour? They were opening mail. I don't understand how the Mavericks can call that an 8 hour work day. I observed today that this person didn't work 8 hours, but they get 2 days off. Now, what does that mean? And I think the concern of the conversation that I think Dan, at least in my memory, ended up, I think, making some sense to him, was the whole issue that we lost something, not gained something. And that what we had lost was a sense of kind of freedom within that day, a freedom to see somebody who really needed a conversation and not question yourself about, if I don't quite get over there right now, that project can wait. So I'm going to take time for this conversation and probably not have anybody question it. And suddenly people were questioning that. And the whole value of that kind of day that isn't spelled out with a starting and beginning suddenly was starting to be shattered.
But what about the kitchen? They do count hours. See, and that's what confuses me is I get one signal that don't count hours, but then another signal that sure. I mean, they work 6 hours and they work 6 days a week and they schedule their day off usually so they can take an overnight hike or whatever. I mean, so they have as big a block of time off as they can. Why doesn't the counting hours hold for the kitchen? Why don't they amble in and work when they want to?
Because the meals need to get out.
Yeah, but see, here's a double standard.
In contrast to some of what Andrew said earlier about if things are not done at the end of the shift to not say my time. See, I would disagree. The shift has more structure, clearly. But I disagree that it's an hour counting. I guess I've seen kitchen people stay over. I saw when Dane and Jen were unable to get back for Saturday, I saw people who clearly that was their day off step in and work and not in a sense demand another day off or an hour, you know, I put in X amount of time. I agree that the system sometimes allows people or encourages people sometimes towards a level of burnout or some people reach too far and don't take time for themselves. The one thing Matt talked about earlier about is reaching an individual decision and then having the community affirm that. And I think that happens here. I don't think there's ever enough affirmation probably. Affirmation is really important. The bigger failure that I feel like that I've experienced in community has been when the wrong decision was made, and that maybe there needed to be a confrontation rather than an affirmation, or a criticism rather than an affirmation. I feel like affirmation is pretty easy at Holden Village, but criticism isn't. And I don't see, I sometimes see people who make wrong decisions that get affirmed for those. And I think that's difficult. It's much easier to affirm than criticize. It feels better.
I'd like to maybe raise another issue and get away from hour counting or things like that, but simply bring up the matter of an egalitarian society wherein we all have the same value to one another. And talk for a little bit maybe about some of the differences between Holden staff and Holden guests. And I would like to just throw out three areas and have people respond to them. One, the area of the furnishing of lodgings. Two, the area of the accoutrements provided, like the linen. And, I had a third, but I can't remember it. Anyway, anybody have anything to talk about that? There is some definite distinctions there, and I think I have noticed definite distinctions. I was wondering if anyone else would like to comment on that.
My mother always said the best linen for guests, too.
I guess I'm
serious. I mean, I guess I think it's kind of hospitable.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know, I had a really hard time this winter hearing people complain about having to go to another building to take a warm shower, because I spent a half a year taking, I didn't even have a shower, I bathed out of a cold bucket. And so I feel like I'm really lucky to have what I have at Holden. And I think part of our living out the gospel is living simply, and that, yeah, maybe the walls are a little dark, but maybe that means it's time to go outside. I come from a family that has never been into interior decorating, so it's really easy for me to see things not match, and it doesn't affect me as much as I'm sure people that have come from very aesthetically pleasing environments. But I guess as a housekeeper, I also feel really strongly about that people's first impression is what they see when they come to pay to stay. And I think that that's part of our mission is keeping this a place where people would like to come.
Doesn't the double standard bother you?
I don't think it's a double standard. I think
it is, kinda. I mean, I think there's a real Christian question here. I mean, on the one hand, I'm not supposed to worry about money because I'm a volunteer. Money isn't to be an issue, right? But all the time we hear about guests this and that because they pay. Okay, they shouldn't have to eat hunger awareness because they pay. They should have the best linen because they pay. Okay, where's the balance there? Why am I a Christian volunteer trying to get away from the concern of money, but the Christian guest, that's what guides our thinking and our actions?
You really think that's true, Phil? That the reason that that happens is because they pay?
Yes, because they pay 70% or whatever of our operation.
Phil, who's ever said they get the best linen because they pay?
Who says
she just,
and they don't
just
get
know.
The best linen. That is such a farce. I mean, the linen is literally the same linen, except maybe there is a rust stain on it. Yeah, I mean, and we get the towels that people leave here that are 10 times the size of those other ones that the guests get. They're the same size, they're the same material, there's just like a matter of stain. I mean, it just, that's, I can't understand. Is that really an issue for people, the linen? Is that really something that concerns people?
I think we deal a lot here with symbology. We have a symbology of a circle with a cross with candles around it. And I think the symbology of me getting my laundry from a place that's separate from the guests, even though it's the same thing, has drawn me apart. If that's the case, why can't I sit at a table with other staff people? Why am I encouraged to sit and mingle with the guests because the guests really like it? Why am I perhaps living in a lodge that hasn't been painted in a couple years and maybe could need some new carpet or something? To me, there is a double standard happening here, and to say, I think that there isn't a double standard because we really do have the same blankets and the same things like that. If it's good enough for me, it's good enough for them. If it's not good enough for them, why should it be good enough for me? I think this double standard has operated through our society in a lot of ways, between men and women, between classes of people, between people with different colors of skin. And I think that Phil has said it, there is a Christian question here. At least I think there is.
For me, the Christian question certainly is not why can't I have better percale linen.
I don't care what my linen looks like, but why do I have to take it from someplace different?
Because it's a matter of keeping order in the laundry. It's a matter of knowing when it's time to order more. It's a matter.
Order more newer ones, right?
Order more linen, because there is no, I mean, ultimately there's a point where we, I mean, that's,
questions we talked about hunger awareness. There's an issue here.
Yeah, because it involves the status of workers here. There's a big hole in the carpet in Lodge 6.
Is there any complaints about the linen? No.
But the idea is that I'm a volunteer, because the concept was that as a Christian, I can do labor and not necessarily expect that the monetary recompense or compensation is the key. Okay. But with the guests, of course that is. I mean, they pay. Okay, and that... And that kind of, I mean, that...
When we discussed putting offices up on the second floor of Koinonia here, one of the first objections was that we lose 3 rooms for paying guests. And that works out to be many nights lodging over a summertime.
Yeah, I think the criticism of that maybe was that those are some of the best guest rooms that we have.
Ah, best.
Yeah, I would say that those probably are some of the 3 best guest rooms that we have.
The guests enjoy those rooms very much more.
I think that's a pretty valid reason to keep them. I don't hear any of our decisions being made because people are paying guests. I hear a lot of our decisions around guests being made because those members of our community are here for a very short time. People that come here for 3 weeks in the summer generally hate their first week, are okay with their second week, and in the third week, they want to stay, and they wish they had stayed longer. And why is it any different for the guests? They're here for 5 to 7 days. They don't get the system. They don't get the food. They don't know where their housing is. They don't know how to get to places. It's a confusing place in some ways. Everybody seems to have the rhythm. Everybody but me. And so that's why we talk about whether we should cut out coffee. We try to make that balance of let people have some fun, let them have a vacation, but not turn it into a resort. Let's try to bring up an issue of hunger, but let's not club people over the head. I don't think money has to do anything with it. I think it's a matter of including those members of our community that are here for a shorter period of time. And I think that because I'm here for a longer period of time, that I am able to deal with holes in the carpet and rust stains in my sheets and other things like that. And I guess that's how I see it. I don't think it has anything to do with the money that guests bring in. I don't think.
See,
I'd have to struggle to think of a decision that's been made because we would lose money from guests.
I think that's what's ludicrous. Thinking
name
that
one.
Money has nothing to do with it.
Name one decision that has been made solely that we'd be afraid of losing guests. Do we eat the style of food that we do because that's attractive to most of our guests?
No, partly because it saves money. To not buy expensive food.
You think, and you think that's the reason that we eat in this style?
I think that, I didn't say that's the whole reason, I think that's part of it. And I think it's naive to say that that's not any of it.
If it wasn't,
I can
be
walk,
a business manager.
I can walk in the guest lodges, and I wasn't involved in the decisions, but just with my eyes, I can see more money was spent on a guest lodge than on a worker lodge. Okay, the lighting is brighter, there's more woodwork that tones down the harsh sounds. Okay, the bedspreads don't have holes in them, which I don't mind, okay, but I think the fact to say that my basis for all this argument is that over the months, I've began to question whether my, to be a volunteer worker at Holden is legitimate or worthy.
Or is valued as much as being a guest here.
Because I see that Holden has a real source of income. It's not like the Peace Resource Center I volunteered for that doesn't sell anything. Holden is a company with a product to sell, and we sell it. Okay, and we have very specific prices.
Yeah, but if they didn't have the product, we couldn't be here.
Yeah.
How could
right?
Well,
that might be true.
I don't know about that. It seems to me that may be partially true, but the nature of our work changes here drastically from a winter community that works in order to meet the demands it creates, and a summer community that works in order to meet the demands that the guests create. And I think that's where a lot of our counting starts to happen, is during the summer when people feel resentful that they're working beyond the needs that the community is creating and are working to meet the needs that what was a winter retreat is now a summer resort.
But without the summer, could they have the winter?
No, the summer finances the winter. I don't know, I heard $40,000 a month or something like that we spend living here in the winter.
That's true in some work areas, Andrew, but I think it's not true in other work areas. That there's work that happens all through the winter that has to be done in order for the summer to happen. And the summer would never exist if the work that was done through the winter didn't happen ahead of it.
Likewise, there's a lot of work that goes on in the summer that makes winter possible. I think I spent almost all of my last summer working on this last winter.
To make having winter a lot less expensive.
I say winter is very much staff-oriented, too, with the meals, talent show, probably a lot of the benefits and the luxuries are for staff in the winter. So, and the question is, all the staff who come in the summer then don't get to enjoy that.
But that's been changing a lot, too, with the increased number of retreats. Last winter, we doubled the number of retreats that we had from the winter before that. I think the guest population is increasing through the winter community all the time. People are learning that Holden's a place you can go to in the winter, and I think that balance is swinging a lot.
And I think that sort of comes back to some of the issues that I'm hearing both Matt and Phil bringing up, that I guess personally I have less of a problem with whether the guests pay and you know, whether they get good linen or all that. I think I tend to agree more with Matt, and that may be more symbolic. But I guess one of the things that I'm hearing that maybe is an issue that is worth taking a look at, seeing why it's such a cause for concern, is what is this disparity between staff and guests? What is this dualism that is talked about? You know, some of the obvious things, they may be very symbolic. The linen on one side and on the other side. And actually, there's probably a very good functional reason, as you say, Jennifer, for it to be that way. And, you know, maybe if we understood that, then we can sort of forget the notion that that symbol really represents the difference between staff and guests. But I think maybe one of the more obvious ones is in the dining hall when all the staff tend to congregate to the west side and all the guests tend to congregate to the east side. And that may be actually more a function of location, since Lodge 6 is closer to the west side than Lodge 4 on the east side. But still, I guess what I'm saying is that regardless of the symbol or the whatever the specific is, what is this distinction between guests and staff. And where is it being a problem? What is it? I guess I'm still a little confused.
It seems to me like it's that... It seems to me that the parent is liking one child better than another child because they're getting different linen. And it seems like we're really acting like kind of a pathological family. And the administration is the parent, and we're all the kids, and the guests are the firstborns, and we're the lastborns. And it seems like we're not feeling cared about by the people who are supposed to be taking care of us, and it seems like that's what the issue is here.
And I'm concerned, along with what you're saying, Aunt Thunder, about what Matt was referring to about not being appreciated. And my perspective is not that. My sense has been that we're very much appreciated by the guests, for the most part. I mean, we do get, you know, those ornery folks once in a while, and some who expect the resort atmosphere, and
who think we're getting paid.
Yeah, but that's their problem, frankly. And you know, I guess we kind of best thing to do is blow it off. But for the most part, I found that we were pretty appreciated by the guests, and I think we generally appreciate each other quite a bit too for being here. And as far as the linen issue and the all of that, I kind of agree with what Kirk was saying, and I feel pretty strongly that if the folks have the best rooms in the village, that's not a whole lot unlike when we have people, relatives, friends over, and sometimes they're not the most agreeable people to get along with either. We still get kind of a kick out of giving them the best rooms in the house, and we put ourselves in maybe something a little less luxurious just to see them enjoy that. And maybe money is in part an issue. It certainly is part of the reason we're here and that we can't be here. But I don't think, to me, that's not the mindset here. I think for the most part, the mindset has been one of being here to contribute something to guests and to provide something for those folks, as well as provide something for ourselves, which is, I don't think many of us are here for the luxury of being here.
Well, that's one thing, I guess, I just wonder if anybody else kind of gets a kick out of it when people enjoy staying here. Mm-hmm. And it seems that we're all complaining that we aren't being appreciated enough, and maybe it's because we aren't looking in the right spots. But there are a lot of people that really appreciate coming here and really like it. And just even talking today to some people on the dock, I mean, I really like it when people have a good time here. And I hope that some other people get kind of a thrill out of that too. Maybe I'm too naive, but that really does a lot for me. And
I think it's interesting. We each bring our lenses. Andres sees some things in terms of children. Randy sees some things in terms of family, how we treat people when they come to visit. I've heard over here some sort of a totally different lens, and I call it kind of a classic Marxist analysis, looking at issues of alienation and...
You're making me nervous.
alienation from labor and seeing the distinctions in an economic way between what's happening in terms of economics, workers, guests. And I also hear the kind of what comes from when we make certain kind of economic assumptions. For example, when we started out talking about this place isn't multiracial and things, it's a volunteer community. So built into the structures of the place economically is the assumption, the classist assumption, that we are all middle class or upper middle class, or else we couldn't be here really. We couldn't afford to be here. And so when we think about, oh gosh, how come there aren't people of color here? Can we be a multi-racial community year round? It's already economically precluded in a structural way. Yet, the frustration that the assumption is that we're middle class or upper middle class, but we're not treated that way in terms of remuneration. That if you're middle class or upper middle class, that's a definition in terms of your income. That in some ways, not always. And so that distinct. Yet for the guests, that economic factor and comes into play. I mean, you're kind of saying, on the one hand, economics makes a difference, you think, with guests, but with us, we're supposed to move into a different category of analysis, sort of one that negates the importance of money. Or, and we call it Christian or something.
Maybe you're right.
I think, though, too, that you're kind of moving into some, in an attempt to articulate what Phil and I are saying better, you're drawing an analogy that is in effect starting to bring up a double standard. For instance, if I were to ask you and say, well, I look at a lot of single women or even women that make less money, is that a class distinction as well? Is not, for instance, some of the feminist or feminine inequalities, is that not a double standard? Why do we look at some things and say, yes, this is a double standard according to my lights, but this other area of issues isn't a double standard because I'm not concerned with it? If we're functioning as a community and hopefully reaching consensus on some kind of issues, that means that my ideas and concerns are just as valid as yours. And to say that maybe Phil and I are working out of a classic Marxist kind of class distinction thing and looking at symbology, I say yes, we are. But we're also looking at some symbology right here hanging in front of us. Symbols are very powerful, and I am afraid that when this community just dismisses some symbols, and I know that it seemed really silly to focus on the linen, it's a symbol of how we maintain a separation between staff and guests. Why are not, for instance, guests staying in Lodge 6 and staff staying in Lodge 4 in the summertime?
And why aren't guests able to go to your house and cook a meal on Hunger Awareness Night? I mean, guests will tell you that we have advantages that they don't.
Why don't we get the jacuzzi, but the guests this weekend don't?
Exactly.
Why do we get to hike the Dole Lakes? Because we know how to get there and the guests don't.
They can find out. Because
my grandpa came to it.
I know that you agree that this sheet thing is a really dumb idea, but I want to talk about it a little bit more because
she's in the sheets.
We talk a lot about, you know, this recycling bit and that we're really trying to use all of our resources, and I don't know, I think I'm really a lucky person to have come. I mean, my wardrobe didn't change when I came to Holden. I have always, since I was in high school, ever since I started buying my own clothes, have lived off of other people's clothing. And same with off of other people's furniture, off of other people's sheets, So I feel like, why should, I don't understand. I guess I feel like maybe this is a way for us to be in solidarity with people of other countries, like we're trying to do with their food, because they don't even probably have sheets. I mean,
I don't know. Laundry to take them to.
Yeah,
maybe those could be discriminated against as guests.
Yeah, able to experience the solidarity we're experiencing.
Holes in the cart.
Exactly. You
know, ugly paint on the wall.
Exactly.
So what is, I don't understand this double standard thing. Maybe I didn't learn about it in college, but I don't understand it at all. It's going completely over my head.
Why aren't the guests living in places with holes in the carpet? Why aren't they living in Lodge 6?
Because
they're guests.
Is there some economic reason why it's not feasible for us to have the entire facility the same level of of repair?
Well, it took us about 20 minutes to get to that. Yeah. Why are the staff treated differently?
Well, no, but I'm wondering, is there any economic reason why we can't address ourselves to getting it all the same level of okay? I agree with you. I think that my time as a volunteer here is money.